It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine. It's Friday the 20th of October 2023. You're very welcome along to the last show of the week. And it's a busy one as always. Very shortly introduce you to our Friday panel. We're going to go through some of the big stories of the day, some of the big stories of the week. Later on, that's entertainment after 11 and so much more besides. Loads of great interviews in the second hour as well. Get involved in the conversation this morning. 086 60 25 000 is the WhatsApp and text, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000. And outside the Republic, of course, 00353. Drop the O and away you go. If you want to watch the show, YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or across your mobile devices. We're also on Twitter / X and Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Right, without further ado, let's introduce our panel this morning. And we'll say good morning first to Professor Pat O'Connor, Professor of Sociology and Social Policy, Emeritus University of... How do you pronounce that word, Pat? I'm still bluffing it all this time. Emeritus.
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 Emeritus. Emeritus.
Well,
it's not...
Can I drop it?
I always say, Greg, if the heart is right, the lip can be forgiven.
Okay, right? So, all right, thank you. Well, my heart, you know, was always in the right place at University of Limerick. Claire Ronan, presenter of the Up and Running Business Show and columnist with the Sligo Weekender. How are you getting on, Claire?
Great.
Great to have you back again. And Senator Niall Blaney, Fianna Fáil spokesperson on Northern Ireland. Senator Blaney, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
We'll start with just listening to the weather forecast at the end of the news there. Met Éireann will be issuing, it says, fewer status yellow weather warnings in future, with the forecaster set to reevaluate the threshold for such warnings. Speaking on Wednesday, Met Éireann's head of forecasting, Owen Sherlock, said the forecaster has heard concerns about warning fatigue. There's been further criticism of the forecaster too for not issuing a red warning earlier this week, as parts of the south of the country are devastated by floods. We've discussed this before. We've been impacted by this before up here. But what needs to be done? I'll start with you, Senator Blaney, because I was watching some of the weather forecasts in Scotland, you know, and it doesn't just tell you what the weather is doing or going to do. It tells you what it's going to do, if you know what I mean, and makes, you know, reasonable predictions in terms of flooding risk and all that and what have you. Yet we seem to have this yellow, orange, red that can be quite hit and miss. Sometimes we don't get a warning up here and you wonder where it is and so on and so forth. What's your view, Niall?
Yeah, well, I find, first of all, I don't pay much attention to the forecast from Met Éireann, because I find them completely hit and miss up here. I'd be quicker to look at a few apps on my phone that are much more closer to the mark day in, day out. And I think it's probably a new phenomenon the last number of years of the warnings. I think the warnings need to be a critical part of daily life and saving lives. But I found, since they've come into being, that they're inclined to cause a variety, a little bit of a storm certain times of the year that really is only a breeze up here, Craig. Other times, those storms can be more dangerous around this time of year or summertime if there's a bit of heavy wind, because trees can come down much easier. I think there has to be an element of cop on, as opposed to just the weather where it's at. And I think if you're going to maybe continuously, and I find this up here, that if you're continuously giving warnings that doesn't materialise, people start to switch off. And when that happens, the difficulty is when you have a real warning,
yeah,
you need to give out, people don't.
All right, they'll just wait for that line to re-establish. It's a little bit then, I suppose, like the boy who cried wolf. Claire Ronan, you know, we have one guy in Carlo Weather. Sorry, Niall, that'll filter through in a second. Claire, we've one guy in Carlo Weather who, his forecasts are far more nuanced. He's on the show from time and again, you know, where he'll say, you know, the rain will probably stop falling around 1 o'clock in the Cork area, but the flood risk, you know, might follow. What I'm trying to say is there's a bit of nuance to it, you know, a bit of an explanation as to the weather and its impact. That's just often sadly lacking with Met Éireann.
Well, it is lacking with Met Éireann. One thing I noticed moving to Sligo over 20 years ago was that they just always put the rain over the northwest. And on some days, when you listen to the weather, it goes from sunny spells, windy spells, rain, like you'd have four seasons in one day. But with regards to the weather warning, I think exactly the same as your other panelist, in the respect that when you get a red warning or a yellow warning and it doesn't happen, people get annoyed. Now, you know, I often think privately, would you be happier if your house fell down when that they were right? But I think there is some fatigue about the warnings that take place. People don't take them as seriously as they used to, for the simple reason that sometimes the storms haven't been as bad as they were predicted to be.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, I suppose they are damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, but they're very heavily resourced as well, though, you know, and maybe they could dig a little bit deeper into it and not try and be all things to all men, maybe issue regional weather forecasts that are more detailed or something, I don't know.
Well, there certainly is a need for that, because actually I go on the apps on my phone as well, and I think Wind Guru is probably the best one. If I'm looking for a serious weather forecast, for example, something like working outside, doing an outside broadcast or Vox Pop or whatever, I will go to my apps, not necessarily check with Met Air. And so you're right. I think there probably should be more concentrated, easier to understand. I love that guy in Carlo Weather, because he's so easy to understand. He just tells you as it is. Yet they probably should change the way they do things. But you get the impression that they've been doing them for a very long time, and maybe there's a bit of a reluctance to change.
Yeah, I've seen that, but I also kind of felt they did get themselves a little bit involved in a race to the bottom and started pushing the weather forecasts out 7 days because everybody else was, not that that's a race to the bottom, but, you know, I don't think they were comfortable in doing that, but they were becoming, I think, almost irrelevant in only predicting the weather for 2 or 3 days and sticking to their guns on that. Pat, what do you think? Pat O'Connor?
Well, I listened to the man on Wednesday. I can't remember his name, the Met Aaron expert.
Owen Sherlock, I believe his name is.
Sherlock. Well, he was dreadful, quite honestly. He basically sort of implied that really people ought to take oranges red, and there wasn't really that much difference. It was pathetic. Okay, so I think the part of the problem in Middleton, for example, seems to have been that the Onacurra River broke its banks, and so it was the accumulation of water. I completely agree with the point that really we probably need to have, I haven't heard the man in Carlo, so I don't know about whether he's the solution, but we haven't heard really forecasts which predict the cumulative effect. And there's been much more concern with wind and rain rather than with flooding, rather with the consequences of saturated ground. I do think that the idea of regional forecasts is very good. There was a period in September when we were being told that Dublin, you know, had these 25 degrees. It was, and they had totally hotter than the summer. In the sunny southeast, it was total fog, right? And nobody seemed to have noticed that. So really, the consequences in the case of Middleton and Castlemartre and those areas, the consequences of the inadequate reporting are huge, of the failure to warn. It happened over half an hour, less than half an hour by all accounts. And with people who have no flood insurance, I mean, the consequence has been disastrous. So I do think Met Aaron need to pull up their socks. They also need to get a better communicator.
Okay, right. Coalition ministers, we read, are privately furious at HSE Chief Executive Bernard Gloucester over his criticism of the health budget and his briefing of opposition TDs on same. Mr. Gloucester says next year's health budget is not adequate for all current costs. Well, it's angered ministers who believe he should not be using the media to lobby for more money. The public expenditure minister yesterday said he cannot rule out a deficit in the health budget, but he vowed not to engage in a war of words over health spending. Meanwhile, locally, Letterkenny University Hospital, 89 health professionals have called for an external review of the ED and other measures at the hospital. Consultants warning of negative outcomes for patients and barbaric conditions. Just for reference, Letterkenny University Hospital, the sixth biggest hospital in the country, second lowest in terms of funding, Sligo University Hospital, our nearest neighbour, has almost double the funding of Letterkenny University Hospital. Would you agree, I'll start with you, Senator Blaney, would you agree that we have a crisis locally and even perhaps nationally in our health service?
Well, I suppose forever and amen, we've had a crisis in our health service, Greg. Services are evolving all the time. The services hospitals provide are expanding all the time. And I think there's very few nations in the world that don't have the similar issues. Certainly if you cross the border or across to the UK, it's a lot worse. I suppose what patients will say is if they get through any, the outcome is quite good. They're looked after really well. We have a particular difficulty in our A&E unit in Letterkenny. And I, for one, welcome the intervention by, first of all, the GPs, led by my own local GP, Dr. McGuinness, and that of the 11 consultants as well. And I think it's timely that we have a review of what's taking place there. And I'm not one to start a blame game, because I think there's an awful lot of moving parts in a hospital with 2,200 people working there. It takes an awful lot to make an A&E work efficiently, and part of that is ensuring that your hospital plays its role in doing that, because every bed within the hospital has a knock-on effect in your A&E service and how quickly you get through it. So as I understand it, our Minister, Charlie McConlogue, met with management on Monday. The request was made to him and the Minister for Health to meet him in Donegal. He has made an offer to meet the GPs in Dublin next week, but he will be visiting the hospital in the not too distant future, within the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, the GPs have declined the option to meet him in Dublin or via video, and they say he needs to come up here and see firsthand what's going on there. Would you agree, Senator, that there has been historic underfunding of Letterkenny University Hospital, and that a special case has to be made to increase the funding, increase the investment, and increase the support for management and staff?
We always need more funding, Greg. And I suppose when we came into government in 2020, the budget was around 150 million. Last year it was 200 million. I think it's you know, I know from the likes of the ambulance service, better outcomes there is about human resources management and getting everybody working. We're also coming through a
well, the problem with the ambulances is there was one period last week or earlier this month where there was not a single ambulance available in Donegal because they were all backed up in a line outside the ED. They couldn't take the patients. They couldn't discharge the patients from the ambulances into the ED. So we had no ambulance cover for a period of time in one day because of the problems at the ED there.
Yeah, and that's really, really serious. So what I'm saying is it's going to take an all systems approach here around the table to identify exactly what is wrong. Is it human resources? Is it a combination of that and budget? I think it needs to be identified very, very clearly in an independent investigation of what's going on at Letterkenny, and then see can we fix the problem.
All right. Claire Ronan, what do you think?
I think it's shocking. So this morning I got up and the first thing I Googled was Letterkenny Hospital. And this has just been going on for years and years and years. What happened to Sláintecare? Does anyone actually know? I know COVID hit, but certainly that whole plan doesn't seem to have been introduced or implemented. I really admire the doctors, particularly Dr. McGuinness, who've made this approach to Stephen Donnelly. It just really shows the concern they have for their patients. But when you say, Greg, that there was no ambulance, can you imagine being at home with your 78-year-old mother and she falls and you don't know what to do and they tell you there's no ambulance and you're paying 52% tax to live in the country? There's something really wrong here. But like, are they going to do another report that comes to nothing, that costs us a fortune? The whole thing to me, I just don't understand why it can't be sorted out. Look at what they did with the private hospitals during COVID, and they in fact ended up with more beds than they actually needed. Letterkenny Hospital, the fact that they don't get as much money, safer as Sligo, why? I don't understand. Why do they not get it? And such a huge area with a growing population, and as you've had all week in Buncrana, with more, say, refugees coming into the country, with our ageing population. I mean, it doesn't take rocket science to see that this situation is going to get worse. There's no step-down facilities. It's just shocking.
Well, the warning signs were there too, Claire, because there was a report off the back of a case taken 6-7 years ago that suggested the ED needed 15 beds. There are currently five ICU ED, five beds at the moment. There's a sixth bed, but it's so far away from the facility that the doctors can't use it because it's not safe. And we heard from a consultant anaesthetist who works in that department that says if they get people better to discharge them from there, such are the conditions of the hospital, that they can have negative outcomes, adverse outcomes, that they don't have the facilities to transfer them from being really sick to getting better. We had a Michael Sugru, who's, I would say, one of the most highly respected consultants in the country, describing stepping over bodies to offer to treat someone when he was off duty, describing the scenes as barbaric. And then we have a national situation whereby we have the head of the HSE, Stephen Donnelly, too, in fairness to him, saying they need more money. We're being told it's a wealthy country, but there's going to be a shortfall in spending on health next year, recruitment embargoes. The public are struggling to make sense of that, how all those moving parts add up.
I can, and then you have this, the scandal of the Children's Hospital. Just like add that in there. That's another thing that is just completely off the charts. But behind all these stories and all these panels you do are people's parents and people's sisters and brothers. And it's the I had an incident recently when my own sister became ill, and we went into A&E in Vincent's in Dublin. She lives in Dublin. And I was actually sick in my stomach bringing her in. Now, actually, she was well cared for, but there just wasn't enough staff there either. It seems to be obviously countrywide, but Letterkenny is definitely being ignored. And this has been going on for years. Not enough chairs for people to even sit on. You know, that's just inhumane. To me, it's I really admire those doctors, but for them to have got to this stage, it's definitely at breaking point.
Pat O'Connor, Professor Pat O'Connor.
I agree that the doctors coming out is very important. I actually do think Bernard Gloucester calling it is very important. I'm a bit frustrated, I suppose, by the absence of clear lines of responsibility in the health service. Who is responsible? The minister? The CEO of the Department of Health, Robert Watt, Bernard Gloucester. It seems to be past the problem, really, between the three of them. And the same seems to happen within the HSE, that I think until there are clear lines, who is responsible for the situation. So in Letterkenny, is it the HSE? Is it the Department of Health? Is it the hospital?
Well, the hospital management are given a certain amount of money to do with what they can. They apply for money, they're not giving it. The head of the Sialta group then obviously determines how services are spread around the different hospitals in the region. Presumably he responds to the HSE, who has a head of the HSE, and then Stephen Donnelly is ultimately responsible for the whole lot. Like, I know what you're saying, it's convoluted and complicated, but at the same time too, there is four or five or six individuals there. There is a chain of command.
Well, I don't think it's sufficiently clear chain of command. I do think that in the case of the allocation of the budget and nothing, and basically the, quote, underfunding of health in the last budget, you'd have to think that there's some kind of a political agenda going on, which is, that... In a way, does it come down to that the Minister for Finance lost patience with the failure to be accountable in health? There's been all sorts of stories leaked about health centres in Wexford which haven't been opened and money being wasted in all sorts of ways. So in a way, I think that's all possible. But who is responsible for tidying that up, for sorting it out? And then to what extent is there a political party agenda? Is it in terms of the allocation to health? Is the desire not to have one of the partners look as good as the other partners coming up to election? Is this the agenda that's going on? I completely agree that people are annoyed, puzzled. I think there are problems in many areas of the country. And there seems to be no willingness on the HSE to learn. So, for example, in Waterford, emergency services, the accident and emergency seems to work, but nobody seems to be looking at what is making it better here. Whereas if you get a heart attack in Waterford, you're screwed, because basically there was a report saying you could get to Cork in an hour and a half. Well, unless, you know, you get a heart attack outside the hospital, that's not going to happen. Also, at weekends, there are problems.
Well, so, we face those challenges here as well, because we only have cardiologists on call. So, Senator Blaney, in fairness, though, like, can you square that circle for us in that, you know, we are told we are a very rich country. We are at the point whereby we can put money away for, you know, difficult times ahead. But then the public will say, well, how more difficult can it get? We don't really have an operational health service in Donegal operating as it should. Can you understand why the budgets were set out as such, and why the expenditure minister is digging his heels in and accepting that there will be a shortfall in health spending next year? I know you're not a spokesperson for Stephen Donnelly, nor indeed the government as such, but can you understand, do you have any insight as to why such a decision might have been made, and why the government are sticking to their guns as they are?
I don't have any insight greater than any yourselves have, Greg. I do believe we're maybe... Pat there is starting to hit a nail on the head there. We are getting to the end of this life cycle. I think Stephen Donnelly was played a poor hand in this budget. I don't think that debate is over. I think there'll have to be extra funding before the year's out, and for next year as well. And that's for us to fight that corner, and we will fight that corner. It's not good enough that the health budget was not properly funded for next year. Absolutely not, given where we are financially, and given that we're leaving money to the side for future downturns in the economy. That said, I don't believe that money will resolve all the issues in Letterkenny Hospital and A&E if we had it tomorrow. And that's why there has to be a whole of departmental approach and a review of our service at Letterkenny General Hospital. I think that's really, really essential. I know we're sick of hearing about reports. This isn't a civil service report. I think the really good thing here is the fact that the consultants and the doctors have come out. And if we get the actors that are involved in the management of the hospital and of the accident emergency, then we get down to brass tacks and identify what the issues are. And only then we can iron them out. I suppose we could talk here all day about them, but until that happens, until we get the minister down and get the ball rolling, the issues as they currently exist will continue to exist.
Quite a statement, Claire, isn't it? I mean, obviously first from Pat, and then endorsed somewhat there from Senator Blaney, that there might be a bit of, you know, pre-election party politics going on in terms of the allocations of budgets, particularly in a department as important as health. It's quite a statement, that.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that actually. They're going to come into an election. Will we get more false promises? Greg, the first job I did ever was a vox pop outside Sligo University Hospital. And you and I both know that you're not supposed to do that on the grounds of the hospital. So we'll keep that a secret, that I actually was on the ground of the hospital.
I'll cut it out when we put the podcast out. Don't worry about it.
But it was pitiful, and it was 9 years ago. So I am sitting here thinking there will be an election. Let's see what comes out in the pre-election promises. But I am really worried that in 9 years' time that we'll be still having the same conversation. Mm-hmm. Because there's been no improvement. And it's actually terrifying, the thought that you could end up sitting on a floor of an emergency.
Well, you see, that's the problem, Claire. That's one of the motivations for the GPs coming out, in that they said that, particularly with older, more vulnerable patients, that they're cautious of sending them to the ED because they're fearful that it could actually do more harm than good. Or if an older person has had an experience of the ED, which is separate, by the way, from the staff. And as Senator Blaney pointed out there before, too, once you actually get into the system, there's a, you know, we're not talking about that level of care there, right? This is literally just trying to get in there. But they've had such a negative experience that they're saying, I'm not going back there again. Yeah. So, and we can't measure the consequences of that in terms of their quality of life or indeed their end of life. And that's what really worries me. And that's why it scares me. And that's why we give so much attention to it here, because it's driven by listener stories. It's not me sort of going, oh, you know, let's talk about the hospital. It's because people ring up and go, please, can you do something? Can you raise this issue? Can you talk about me, Di? Can you talk about me, Ma, Claire?
Yes. No, actually, I've personal experience of this because both my parents have both passed away, and both of them passed away having spent a little bit of time in a very crowded emergency department. And I can tell you sitting here that there is no doubt that it expedited both deaths. Now, I'm not blaming anyone for that, but they're untold stories. There's so many of them out there that it frightens me, you know, that we've to wait for another report. I became ill in Portugal at Easter and ended up going to a GP and was put in the GP surgery on a bed, on a drip, until 8 o'clock that evening when he said, right, you'll have to go to hospital. But he had already got onto the hospital. Like the hospital wasn't any more glamorous than ours. The chairs were not particularly comfortable or anything, but the treatment was much, much better. So there needs to be a change. Is Stephen Donnelly going to be the minister that does that? Is this new Pendergrosser firm, the HSE, is he going to implement it?
Well, we need to know. They thought they got rid of someone who would rattle the cage. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And I want a word from Senator Blaney and then from Professor Padacona. Senator Blaney, you know, I think it would be naive to think if there were a change of government that everything would be fixed all of a sudden. But in matters of health, then, is it time that we take it off the 5-year cycle or the 4-year cycle and the pre-budgets and the post-budgets and all that kind of stuff? Is it naive to think that could we deal with matters such as health that require really long-term planning and are not really political footballs, where we have sort of a cross-party approach to it? Maybe that's what Sláinte Care is. I haven't a clue, to be honest with you. But it's just on such an important thing, you know, this rowing across the floor of the Dáil, you know, when really the system needs such a change that any political party, it will take them years to do it if the motivation was there. Do we need to sort of, is it possible even to take this out of the political football arena?
Well, I think that there'll always be a political football arena, Greg. It's part of our democracy. It's how the system works. I'm not aware of a better system, to be honest with you, albeit not ideal. Sometimes the political footballs that can be bounced around. But there has to be a bit of context in this as well. I suppose if you look back over the last couple of years with COVID, the demand was on staff, and that had had a strain on our workforce, first and foremost. Secondly, we're facing increased, very big increase in demand year on year in our accidents and emergency. All that needs to be examined. Is it just the fact that our aging population is creating a demand? I don't believe it is.
Well, we know that, but in fairness,
refugees coming in. So the point is, for me, it's not so much the politicians deciding the budget. It's maybe us having a 5 or 10 year plan based on what we know at this stage of what the projections will be, and maybe they should have a more informing view of what the budgets need to be until the next 5 or 10 years.
Right.
Because if we have projections that are 15-20% increase year on year, then the projections would tell you that we need a certain budget that increases year on year. The other problem we have,
I get that. Now, I respect what you're saying, but we were told in 2016 that we need 15 ICU beds. We've got 5. So, you know, when we have predictors, we don't do anything about it either. So, like, I'll come to you, Pat, on this one. I mean, we have a fair idea. Niall, if you ever want to come back in, please do. But, Pat, we have a fair idea where we're going. We know where the population is going. We know, like, older people, I think, are getting tired, and none of you are guilty of this. but feel like because they're getting older and living longer, they're being blamed for problems in the health service, when really we know
nothing,
what's...
Not being blamed, Greg. No. Can I just clear that?
Yes, but I literally said not from you.
The fact of where we are.
Yeah, I literally said not from anyone on this call. But do you get where I'm coming from, Pat? We know where we're going, don't we?
Well, Sláinte Care was cross-party, and Robert Watt, Secretary General in the Department of Health, has blocked its implementation on the grounds that he didn't want to increase autonomy in the area. And the previous head of the C of HSE was of the same opinion. They were in cahoots on that. So that's the first problem, the failure to implement Sláinte Care. The second problem is it does seem to me that the HSE is not working, and that one way of solving the problem is to basically decentralise it. Then at least politicians from every hue will be exposed to the inhumanity of the system, basically, at a local level, and that may concentrate their minds.
Okay, let's take a break. Back with more from our guests on the programme this morning, Professor Pat O'Connor, Claire Ronan and Senator Niall Blaney. Caller says report on report on report, review on review on review, but nothing ever changes. Incompetent government, let the elections come soon, please, they say. Another better standing than sitting in those chairs in the ED. I mean, we had a commitment that, I know this sounds like messing around the edges, but we did have a commitment that cushions will be placed on those chairs, but apparently they went missing or they were ordered, but they're not there now. Have any of you sat on a chair in the ED? Yeah, I have, for 2 12-hour sessions in the not-too-distant past. Steel chair, surely this could be dealt with. You don't need an inquiry to sort this out. When I last spent 12 hours there, I took my own cushion with me. Someone else brought deck chairs with me. And listen, let's not kid ourselves. They're uncomfortable, perhaps by design, so people don't sit around for no reason either. I wouldn't be surprised. Right, this is not a problem, or an issue, sorry, specific to Donegal. It's right across the country, but it came to focus here recently, and that was the arrival of 66 asylum seekers, all male, moved into Bonkrana this week following protests, political representation, whatever it took. They were moved out again. It's not just Bonkrana. I understand there was a meeting last night in the west of the county over concerns of the imminent arrival of a group of asylum seekers into the area. From testimonies and speaking to people, people seem to be particularly concerned when it's groups, large groups of males, not sure if they've got all their documents on the arrival into this country, or if they've been adequately vetted or processed to ensure that they don't present a threat to any particular area. The people are worried, they say, at least some of them, and are concerned at the lack of consultation before such decisions to move them into areas are made. They're also concerned about the security, which I indicated there. Do we need to review, or can we review, how we deal with the international obligations, Pat O'Connor, that we've signed up to?
This is very difficult. I don't think really consultation is realistic, given the pressure we're under. I think it is interesting that it is men that are seen as the problem, that in a way we've absorbed a large number of Ukrainians who are largely women and children with relatively little fuss or problems. I mean, and in a way, the large numbers of children who've been absorbed into schools is without really any fuss and bother. The main problem around the Ukrainians seems to be if they're moved, that they have put down roots, and then moving them seems to be a problem. But one of the things that I suppose, certainly anecdotally, the women, the Ukrainians, seem very keen to work, right? And that, I think, is, from the community's point of view, is a huge bonus and asset. They become, they're seen as a resource within the community. And one of the problems with the international asylum seekers is that there is this bar on them working. They cannot apply to work for a minimum of, I think it is 5 to 6 months, and even then there are difficulties with processing. And I think from the point of view of the men themselves and of the communities, large numbers of men hanging, as the community sees, hanging around, are perceived as a threat. Even like, in a way, we all know that even if you have a crowd of young people, Irish young people, hanging around, you know, it can be a bit nerve-wracking, because you think, gee, you know, what are they up to if there are no facilities for them? Do you know what I mean? Skateboarding or coffee shops or whatever. So I think part of the problem is caused by this rule that they cannot do anything. And it was interesting that some of them were basically in tents outside the, I think it was the Central Mental Hospital in Dublin. And they said, like, why won't they let us in and we can, you know, clean it up and do stuff there? I mean, it is interesting. I love to watch on the telly. I can't remember the exact name of it. It's where a load of men go in and make a house suitable for, they built a house in 9 days, or they make it suitable for families who have problems, you know, if the physical or mental handicap. And it is heartwarming to see, you know, men with
and that is quite a nice picture that you paint, Pat, but what the people of Inishowen might feel is that, you know, you're putting 66 people into 20 rooms. They're not all mates either. They're all from different backgrounds, different parts of the world. It's close to schools. You already have to wait quite some time to see a GP. There are pressures, as we've already outlined, on the acute hospital service. Though, if the truth be told, the majority of these are young people and perhaps won't even, be seen in the ED. And just generally, as you say, you know, hanging around outside, they find it intimidating. So we all know that, but what is the solution?
Well, I think the solution is really looking at that requirement that they do nothing.
Right. Claire Ronan, what's your view?
Well, of course, there is a difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker. I think that the communication lines should be opened. And I know that this is often in an emergency situation and that all of a sudden they have to get these people on buses and they just say, right, you're off to Bunkrana or Inishowen or whatever. But lack of communication causes suspicion. Because
can I just say one thing in relation to that? Change of use applications in terms of planning go in quite some time in advance. The ordering of bunk beds and beds and other facilities all quite in advance. So there's certainly advance enough notice to get the accommodation ready for them. So like whilst the immediate move on a given night might be a short-term decision, the planning in the local area, often under the radar, has to go ahead quite some time in advance. Claire, sorry to interrupt you, but it's just something that I wanted to point out, say, for instance, as it relates to the situation in Bunkrana.
Well, I actually totally agree with you there. I was going to say that. I mean, I think that particularly in it, I saw it when it happened in Sligo, there were rumours and, you know, going around about the Ukrainians, the refugees and the asylum seekers and 66 men moving into a small area. People are going to be concerned and those concerns should be addressed. And with all, as you say, with all that, they're planning for the bunk beds and all of that, there should be a communications person working within each site and giving people information. I don't know, did you see, you may have, we have some modular homes in Sligo that were built. Now, the planning was rushed
through. Don't
mention
modular homes in Donegal, whatever you do, because we've been looking for them. We've been looking for them for quite some time, but go on.
I spoke to a lot of the neighbours when the Ukrainians were moving into the modular homes and they were, you know, receptive. But the same situation is applying all over the country. What about my son? He can't get a mortgage. I'm moving. I met a woman who said my two children, who are both doctors, have left for Australia to try and raise some money to come back and buy a house. And yet these people have moved in across the road. So, look, you can understand the concerns. And you know the other thing, Greg, that I find about all of this? People are terrified to be labelled. And I saw that with regards to Bunkrana. They said, please don't call us far right or far left. We just have a concern. And I think the communication could be solved
quite
easily.
But the problem is, Claire, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. We have seen public consultations in the past and the arguments have been made from the floor that we don't have the facilities, we don't have the school places, we don't have the GPs, we don't have the space in the hospital, we don't have the housing, we don't have the, and so on and so forth. So you listen to those concerns and say, we listen to you, but we're moving them in anyway, because we have to put these people somewhere. I'll come back to you. Senator Niall Blaney, what's your view?
Well, I suppose it's something that I've been exercised for quite some time. Greg, you remember a year ago, we had Rodrigo Gorman put a stop to taking any more Ukrainians into Donegal, purely from a humanitarian point of view and from the point of view of looking after our own people. And I take Milford as a perfect example. We had a massive influx into Milford. The schools are full. There's no more room. Anybody that comes in that happens to move to Milford tomorrow, there's no workplace for them, the school. There's no GP service. So it's a humanitarian thing. It's not just about the refugees. It's also about our own people. And I know of late there has been an influx of refugees from Africa as well, and to Letterkenny, and they're coming with terrible problems. You couldn't but feel sorry for them, but there's no GPs for them, and they have no alternative but to go to A&E. And that's part of our problem in A&E as well. I'm not getting back on that area again. I'm just mentioning in passing. So there has to be a better approach with our existing services in each county. And if you look at Donegal over the last 2.5 years, there's about 10,000 people taken in. Per head of capita, Donegal has done more in its bit. And I think that has to come into it and play a part.
So you're saying Donegal has done enough?
At this stage, compared to the rest of the country, I think we're saturated at the moment. We're struggling to take care of all involved that's here at the moment. And I don't think it's safe to take anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point, Pat, because, I mean, we have to consider the welfare of the Indigenous population as well, because all those resources are being stretched, not only, as Senator Blaney talked of there, not only because of refugees or international protection candidates, but also the local population.
I know, I suppose, I mean, there you can... Two thoughts occur to me. One is, on the one hand, I mean, how many of our relatives, all of our relatives, went to the UK, America, Australia, right? Because their lives were threatened in various ways, not least by famine, and made lives there. And were, in the case of the UK, were stigmatized, no Irish, no dogs, right? And in the case of America, pulled and dragged often from the bottom up. So kind of...
But we did go there with documents. We went there to work. We probably went there with a few quid in our back pocket.
You know, Well, if you look even closer, the 90s, how many undocumented Irish went in, even in the 1990s?
Yeah, but they had Irish documents. They were just undocumented in America. But I take your point.
But they were working illegally.
Well, they're still there, which, ironically. They're still there, about 50,000 of them. Yeah,
exactly. Now, the other side is, it doesn't seem to me to be rocket science that you have a thing called demography. So if the population...
Because an application will be made if people receive citizenship or receive the right to stay, and we've seen it actually with some of our foreign workers in the health service, where they will say, "Well, we want to be reunited with our families now," and that will be coming down the line in the future as well. I think that's something maybe also needs to be included in this whole conversation, because we have to look forward to future numbers as well.
Yeah, and actually that has happened. I happen to know quite a few families who live in Globe House over the years, asylum seekers. And in a lot of those cases, they were able to get set up themselves once they got their papers through, get into an apartment in Sligo. A lot of them went to the ATU. And then I know quite a few whose wives and children came over and joined them. But that is different to the situation we're in here. You know, I can understand where people are concerned, because there's no papers. So you can't do a Garda vetting on these people. We just don't have time, and we don't have the resources to do anything like that. And people are worried that there could be an axe murderer in among these people.
But there could be an axe murderer. It could be an axe murderer living next to you. Like the one thing I will point out, and I've worked closely with the guards on this one, there has been no peaks or concerns or trends in any particular area of crime in areas in Donegal where these people have come into. So there's a fear and then there's a reality, Claire. How do we manage that?
Well, you know, that is a multi-million dollar question. Now, I live in Ross's Point village, and we have a population of 800, and we have, or 883, and we have 800 Ukrainians have moved in. So we've doubled our population with them. And it's a very interesting study, because at the beginning, people were concerned because we weren't being told anything, but now they've settled in.
But where are they from?
Well, they're all from Ukraine.
You see, this is it's very, very different, because that's the same story up and down up and down the country, Niall. It does seem to be specifically, and finally, unfortunately, we're out of time, it is specifically large groups of young men, people call them military age. I don't think it matters if they were 60. You know what I mean? If it was 60-year-old men going into a place, I don't think it matters what age they are, as if they're going to start a war.
Listen, and I hear what Pat said there as well. You know, we're not anti-refugees. We know and understand what our many of our people at these shores. It's not about that. It's ensuring that services are in place to look after these people. And at the moment, there's lots of places in Donegal that's saturated, and that's the point. And there needs to be a whole review of the country. And we can't keep putting people in where there's no services. It's not in anybody's humane interest to do that.
Senator Niall Blaney, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Claire, as always, I was going to say, it's only our second time. Maybe after four, I'll say as always. But for now, thank you very much for joining us. I do appreciate it greatly. Take care of yourself. And last but not least, with my heart in the right place, Professor Pat O'Connor, Professor of Sociology and Social Policy, Emeritus, University of Limerick.
Okay. Exactly. Thanks, Greg.
Have a lovely weekend, Pat. God bless you. Take care.